This is AgriPulse Open Mic. I'm your host, Jeff Nelly. Our guest this week is South Dakota Congressman Dusty Johnson. AgriPulse Open Mic is brought to you by NCIS, the National Crop Insurance Services. Crop insurance, the smartest, most efficient way to secure America's food, fiber, and fuel supply. AgriPulse Open Mic continues with South Dakota Representative Dusty Johnson next. Today's Open Mic segment is brought to you by America's Crop Insurance Industry, which is thankful for the continued support of farmers, commodity organizations, rural businesses, lenders, and lawmakers who are fighting to maintain a strong farm safety net, providing individualized protection on more than 540 million acres of farmland. Crop insurance remains the smartest, most efficient way to secure America's food, fiber, and fuel supply. This is AgriPulse Open Mic. Hundreds of farmers from across the country were in Washington last week calling on members of Congress to challenge the political calendar and partisanship and deliver a new farm bill. South Dakota Representative Dusty Johnson says there's no good reason a new agriculture and nutrition bill isn't finished by now.
I think having farmers in town is a big impact. I mean, listen, we don't have a good story to tell. I mean, there is no reason we don't have a farm bill done. And listen, on the House side, we've tried to do our work. We wrote the text. We marked it up in committee. We voted it out of committee. So we've got a little better story to tell. But when particularly Senate staffers have to sit down with farmers and ranchers from across America, look them in the eye, and try to come up with some reason that we aren't getting our work done, I think that little bit of shame in those staffers' hearts will help us try to get something done before the end of the year.
But at the same time, the majority leader on the floor chiding House leadership that their CR did not include an extension of the farm bill. Does that give an indication of the political will of the upper chamber?
Yeah, I was real disappointed to hear that, because going for a one-year extension at this point is waving the white flag. It's acknowledging that we are just not even going to try to get our work done. I like to keep pressure building up in the pressure cooker. Unfortunately, in this town, you know, so often people, and I'll say especially the Senate, doesn't get their gosh darn work done until they're forced to. I mean, it's deadlines that drive achievement. And so I get it. Schumer wants a one-year extension, and I guess, you know, I guess that makes life easier for some of his members. But I don't think the politicians should be in D.C. to make their lives easier. I think we should be here to actually govern. And so I do not want a one-year extension on this CR, because I want to keep pressure up for us to do our work.
Be realistic, if you can, as far as the work that Congress needs to do facing the end of the fiscal year. Senator Grassley outlined all the work that absolutely had to be done to keep the government funded and other operations in place. Is there realistically time, from your perspective, to get it done?
It is going to be really hard to get a farm bill done. But to me, that's all the more reason to keep the pressure up, because let's say for a minute that there's a 0% chance. I don't think that's true. I don't think it's likely we get a farm bill done, but I still think there's a legitimate chance. But wouldn't it be better for us to get half or two-thirds of our work done, even if we can't get the whole enchilada? I mean, wouldn't it be great if we could get Debbie Stabenow to release her text? Again, we don't even have text from the Senate. To get text, let's do a little markup. Let's maybe go to conference, even if that's going to take 4 weeks, and maybe even if that pushes us a little bit into 2025. Wouldn't it be good to go to conference and start to get a sense of where the differences will be between the House and the Senate farm bills? And so, listen, the timeline is tough, but the fact that it's tough doesn't mean we shouldn't do anything.
So with regard to the work that has been done leading up to this day today, if it's not done by the end of the calendar year, does all of that work go in the trash and we start over? Or is there any baseline for work that we could pick up from here?
Yeah, and you're right to talk about the end of the calendar year. I mean, technically, a lot of these programs lapse on September 30th, which is the end of the fiscal year. But practically speaking, it's the end of the calendar year where a lot of the commodity programs would lapse. That's sort of the bigger deadline. So the answer to your question about do we have to start all over, well, yes, technically, yes. There aren't any bills introduced during this two-year session of Congress that automatically renew in the next two-year session of Congress. They'd have to be reintroduced, they'd have to be re-voted on in the Agriculture Committee on the House side. But, listen, you've already done all the hard plowing. I mean, you've had the tough conversations. Everybody's already on record. Again, a strong, yeah, good, quality, bipartisan number of us voted that out of committee. We'd certainly be happy to do it again if that's what it takes for us to actually provide 5 years of certainty to the American producer. It would be better if we didn't have to go through that step. Let's just get it done now.
Well, with a $1.5 trillion bill, what's $33 billion? And how do you fix that?
Well, yeah, the money matters. I mean, when I laid out my top priorities for the farm bill, and listen, I got all of them tackled. Clearly we want to make sure the safety net, the risk management programs are in place. We want to make sure we're doing right by working lands conservation. We want to make sure we got market access. But being fiscally responsible was among those top five priorities for me. And so I don't want to poo-poo the impact of, you know, a gap of $33 billion. I would say these are issues that big boys and big girls can work through. We've done it with every farm bill in the past. There have always been money fights on every farm bill. Let's not make excuses why we can't get it done. Let's go get it done.
So I don't ever want to create the nutrition versus agriculture, but if you talk to people like Bread for the World, if you talk to Feeding America, if you talk to others that are working with the hungry in the country, you can see that our hunger deficit is bigger now than it was during the COVID pandemic. It continues to swell. And for agriculture, tremendously out of balance with the dollars and cents of operating today. So what gives? How do, it comes to a point to me that maybe we just don't have the money to do what we have to do. Is that the case? Are we there?
It is. Listen, number one, we're a rich country. We got enough money. People shouldn't be starving in this country. Number two, though, we do a very bad job, I think, of working people off of nutrition programs. And clearly, having food cost 30% more today than it did 5 years ago is not helpful. I mean, that clearly moves us in the wrong direction. It is politically a problem when you've got one part of the ledger that deals with production agriculture really constrained by dollars and cents, and then the other part of the ledger, the nutrition programs, are totally unconstrained. They were able to automatically grow, and we had an administration that made some decisions that caused them to grow a lot faster. Listen, we should be able to do both, but you have to have a little parity in saying, you know, how do we prioritize getting people off programs who can? How do we help them grow their skills? How do we make sure people are fed, not just for the short term, but for the long term? And it's been real hard. The Senate just will not engage in those conversations with us. And I think that's been frustrating for those of us on the House side.
So now the race for the Oval Office is between Harris and Trump, and the first debate is done. And if we look across the country, it appears to be you could create a path for a majority for either party in the House and or the Senate. How does the election bear into things like the budget, like farm bill, like other policy where a majority in any one of the three would make a difference?
Oh, this is, I know everybody always talks about every election like it's, you know, the most important thing we've ever seen. So I won't do that. I would note the stakes are pretty gosh darn high. If just because you can make a plausible argument that almost anybody wins almost any one of the three branches of the policy-making arena. I mean, Republicans are clearly quite a little bit more likely to take over the Senate than not, but the House is in play, the White House is in play, and a number of these really important Senate seats are in play. And I do think, unfortunately, our country's getting more and more and more polarized. People are forgetting how to work together. We've lost a lot of that muscle memory. And so the difference between a Democrat D.C. policymaking machine and a Republican policymaking machine could not be, it just, the gap couldn't be bigger. And in a country that's so 50-50 split, it seems like more of our solutions should probably be based on common ground rather than this idea you win one more House seat and so now you get to impose maybe a vision of America that's far further to the left than where the average American's at.
I'm willing to lay a bet that there's not going to be a supermajority in either chamber, which means that compromise is going to be required to get anything done.
And we're not very good at that. And that means that things like the Farm Bill that only ever are going to get done with votes on both sides of the aisle. It's getting harder and harder to get them done. And listen, I would probably be a better politician if I showed up on your show and just breathed fire and brimstone and described half of all Americans as bad human beings. But listen, gang, we're living together. We got to govern this country together. We got to start the conversation about when it comes to food, where are the common ground principles that we can build from?
So if I'm watching the debate as a farmer, and I look at the trade imbalance that we are forecast to see in the coming year at over $40 billion. I'm looking for some sort of a trade answer. And on one side, I see tariffs. And on the other side, I don't really see a clear trade path that tells me we maintain or we grow. How do we address trade? And is there a way to move this higher into the political scheme?
I think people get really hung up on the overall, like the trade deficit. And clearly we want every year, we want to be selling more American goods to more of the world. Market access really matters. But if the trade, if we happen on one more year to buy, the Americans maybe have more money in their pockets, so they're more willing to go buy, particularly fruits that sometimes can be very expensive. If Americans end up buying more kiwis, that doesn't hurt America. That can help America. And so I try not to get hung up on just the number. I try to ask myself, what's going on inside the number? And if we're buying stuff that we can grow from other places, that's a problem. If there's a year where we're not making it easier for American farmers and ranchers to sell into other markets, that's a problem. But I think we want to look at the story behind the numbers rather than just get, too drunk on looking at the one number.
Then let me advance one of the topics that I was saving for later. We're waiting for the Treasury, not the USDA, not other agencies or EPA, to offer us rules for 45Z. At the point we have foreign product coming into the country and those subsidies are going to other countries as opposed to homegrown crops here in the area. What's your thought on a timeline from the Treasury for a direction, and how important are the regulations that they're going to write for who is actually able to take advantage of these benefits that the taxpayers have written in the Inflation Reduction Act?
Yeah, I'm pretty frustrated with the rules that the administration rolled out on the 40B. That's for ag-based aviation fuel. And then I'm really frustrated we don't have the 45Z yet. And hopefully we don't replicate the problem with the 45Z that we did with the 40B, which is they were just way too prescriptive. I mean, you got producers out there that, listen, they want to be good stewards of the environment. They want to grow. They want to have feedstocks that meet these requirements. But so these requirements have to be consistent with real farming practices. And you can't bundle them together in ways that are just not realistic or attainable at scale. And so, listen, you're asking the question exactly right. My hope is that we can get some common sense rules out in 45Z and that the American farmer can, make a bunch of money making it easier for ag-based fuels to power America.
What was this section of Inflation Reduction Act meant to throw subsidies to China for supposedly used cooking oil that doesn't have a particular standard for what it actually is?
Well, and that's what's so frustrating. And, of course, I voted against the Inflation Reduction Act, and that doesn't mean that there wasn't anything good in there. But, man, there was a lot of lousy in there. I mean, lots of lousy. But, rather than play politics on that front, I'll just say when it comes to some of the stuff that can be good, can increase American competitiveness, can put more money in the pockets of, you know, American producers, even that we're not doing very well. You're exactly right. You look at something like with EVs. I mean, 90% of the money related to these EVs is flowing to China, or at least on the battery side, at least on that part of the supply chain. We've got a bill this week that we're taking up that would attempt to make it clear that the Chinese Communist Party can't get rich off these American tax credits. But the Inflation Reduction Act, listen, they rushed it. It was a one-party work product. And I think we're paying some of the price for that now.
Congressman, the USDA's latest economic outlook from ERS wasn't as bad as the February numbers, but when you look at major cash crops, certainly a contrast to livestock. Here's the core of the issue. Some farmers have shared concerns about breaking even this year, much less about securing operating loans for next year. And if there's no new farm bill, they're in a world of hurt.
Yeah, I mean, I haven't yet talked to a producer that alleges that they should be able to make money every single year regardless of what prices are and regardless of what inputs are. They do want to believe, and I think we owe it to them, with the idea that this is going to be a fair marketplace, that things are going to move in a sane and rational way, and that there are going to be effective risk management tools available to them. And part of having some rationality in those risk management tools is making sure that, like in Title I, we've got reference prices that are actually tied to modern input costs. I mean, we almost couldn't be in a different price environment than we were 6 or 7 years ago when we wrote the last farm bill. I mean, inputs are a world of difference. And so let's make sure that we get this farm bill done. The House version does a great job with those reference prices. But listen, I'm not going to be a baby and pitch a fit. We put forth a plan. It doesn't have to be the plan, but we really need the Senate to show us their plan so we can get our work done.
You led a letter asking for information with regard to China and the Chinese technology that farmers are using today, from drones to other means. How real is this threat? And what do you feel will need to be done when we measure the extent of it?
I don't blame anybody who went out and bought a drone and is using it for agricultural purposes or maybe for application purposes. I understand why they did what they did. So this is not about blame to them. This is about acknowledging the very real liability that exists. We have absolutely documented instances where this information has been accessed by the Chinese Communist Party. And just longer term, we've got to do what we can to try to eliminate some of this risk, some of these threats in the broader supply chain. We did it with Huawei. I mean, basically every American telecommunications network 10 years ago had Huawei at the heart of their network. We, in a very wise bipartisan move, said, no. We cannot give them control over our telecom network like that. And we started to wean ourselves off Huawei. We took a lot of that equipment out. We replaced it with equipment from our friends and allies and Americans. We need to do that same thing when it comes to drones. We don't have to do it all today, but we have got to start the process now.
Are you afraid that somehow a Star Wars event would take place and all the drones would rise up against the U.S.? Or is it the fact that those drones are gathering data and information that could be land in the hands of the Chinese government?
I mean, it is absolutely more about information. It's more about mapping. But there are, in an unclassified setting, it's hard to go into a lot of detail. But I would tell you, particularly for the drones that perform application, there are legitimate intelligence concerns about their ability. If we get crossways with China, for those drones to apply something other than stuff we want applied.
One of the big issues in the debate, and it appears to be in this election, is the border. You've seen it. How big is this issue, really?
It's huge, and I don't, sometimes I just shake my head about how dumb we can be in Washington. I don't care where you're at in the political spectrum. We can't look at 8 million or 10 million people illegally entering this country in the last 4 years and just say, well, that's no big deal. It's a huge deal. And listen, I get it. I mean, a lot of these people, they're not legitimate refugees. We know that 90% of them will fail their credible fear hearing they're going to get before a judge. So they're not refugees. If they're legitimate refugees, I understand that we need to have a place for them. A lot of these folks are not refugees. They're just, they want a better economic life. And I think that's a beautiful thing. But there's a different line for that. There's a different process. And this administration has made it way too hard to get here legally and way too easy to get here illegally. We need to find the will to fix this, because having a border that is still largely uncontrolled isn't just about illegal immigrants. It's also about every month more fentanyl coming across that border than would be needed to poison, 100 million Americans. I mean, we need to get this under control. I don't know how anybody can argue the other side.
Congressman, thank you for taking time on the first week back to spend with us here on AgriPulse Open Mic. You've been here, and you know that AgriPulse Open Mic hands you the mic for the last word.
I just love what you do. I mean, you talk to a lot more producers and people who care about food and American agriculture than I do. So thanks for every single day making sure they've got the information they need to be not just good producers, but good citizens.
Our thanks to South Dakota Representative Dusty Johnson, our guest this week on Open Mic. AgriPulse Open Mic is brought to you by NCIS, the National Crop Insurance Services. Crop insurance, the smartest, most efficient way to secure America's food, fiber, and fuel supply. For AgriPulse, I'm Jeff Nellie.